issues like sexual assault and domestic violence and sexual harassment, those are understood as women's issues that some good men help out with. But a big part of my work is trying to shift the paradigm, because I don't accept the premise that these are women's issues that good men help out with. I think these are really men's issues, and men are committing the overwhelming majority of the harassment, abuse, and violence. And until we shine the critical spotlight on men and male culture, and not individual men necessarily, but the culture that produces abusive men, then we're only going to be cleaning up after the fact.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. Imagine for a moment that you've spent a wonderful evening eating dinner at a restaurant with a group of friends. It's now late at night, and you have to walk back to your car alone. What are some of the thoughts that immediately spring to mind? If you're a man, chances are you'll probably get up, say goodnight, and walk to your car. At most, you might be trying to remember where you parked the car or put your keys, or whether you've had too much to drink, but that'll probably be the sum of it. Now, if you're a woman, remembering things like where you parked your car or where you put your keys is just the start, because most women will also be asking themselves things like, how far away is my car? Is it dark? Is it in a location that's easy for someone to attack me? Should I ask someone to walk me to my car, or am I being silly? Could I use my keys as a weapon? Do I have mace with me? How quickly will it take me to unlock my car? What if someone's in the back of my car? How fast can I outrun someone who's behind me if I feel like they're following me or if I hear footsteps? If a man or group of men pass me, how can I assess if they might harm me? Is there anyone I can call to let them know that I'm leaving, so if something happens, they'll come looking for me? Should I pretend to be talking on my phone to deter anyone? What are all the things that I can do to ensure I'm safe? Americans in particular like to boast that they live in the freest country on earth, and yet half the population doesn't even feel free enough to go for a walk at night because of the widespread fear of men's violence. Studies show that nearly 1 in 3 American women and almost 1 in 6 American men experience some form of sexual violence during their lifetimes. Dr. Jackson Katz is a leader in the field of gender-based violence. He holds a master's degree from Harvard Graduate School of Education and a PhD in Cultural Studies and Education from UCLA. Recently, Jackson updated his classic best-selling book, The Macho Paradox, which originally came out in 2006, addressing gender-based violence and painting a positive vision of masculinity, which is especially relevant in the post-Me Too era. In this episode, you'll hear from Jackson, who'll share why violence against women is not a woman's issue, despite the fact that this is something women are encouraged to tackle on their own. He'll also share how gender equality is key to women and men's safety, well-being, and survival. Violence against women and girls is difficult to tackle because it can happen anywhere, and it takes many forms, ranging from domestic or intimate partner violence to sexual harassment and assault, female genital mutilation, trafficking, and sexual violence and conflict, as well as gender-related killing. All of this creates long-term physical, sexual, and mental health consequences for women and girls, including death. Violence not only has long-lasting consequences for women, but also for their families and communities. The real cost to women is that the solutions put forward are focused on women. Wear appropriate clothes, carry mace, don't walk alone at night. In fact, don't walk at night. Don't encourage men. Don't get drunk. Watch your drink. Don't flirt. And the list goes on and on and on. Why is it that women are asked to solve a problem they don't create? Here Jackson explains this issue.
So I've been doing this work for more than 35 years, and my book, The Macho Paradox, essentially pulls together into one book a lot of my ideas that I've developed over the years about violence against women as a men's issue and a big part of my work is about reframing issues like sexual assault and domestic violence and sexual harassment. Those are understood as women's issues that some good men help out with. But a big part of my work is trying to shift the paradigm, because I don't accept the premise that these are women's issues that good men help out with. I think these are really men's issues, and men are committing the overwhelming majority of the harassment, abuse, and violence. And until we shine the critical spotlight on men and male culture, and not individual men necessarily, but the culture that produces abusive men, then we're only going to be cleaning up after the fact. And so my book, The Macho Paradox, is a book-length articulation of all the different aspects of that concept and that approach. Men are the ones committing the overwhelming majority of it. For example, rape. Something like 99% of rape is committed by men, but we call it a women's issue. Whether the victims are female, which they are in approximately 90% of rape cases, or a male, which they are in approximately 10% of cases, the perpetrators are overwhelmingly men. So calling rape a women's issue, in my opinion, is a subtle form of victim blaming, because it's like saying it's their issue, it's their problem. And then what flows from that is that it's their business and it's their work and it's their responsibility to deal with it. When in fact, men who are committing the overwhelming amount of violence then kind of get a pass, if you will. And I have to say, and the culture that produces them gets a pass, because again, my argument is, and I'm not alone in this, of course, that, you know, unless you want to subscribe to the bad apples theory of social problems, that the social problems that we have are the result of individual pathology somehow, you know, some, you know, wiring went haywire in this guy or that guy. I mean, which I think is an absurd way of thinking about a systematic social problem. Unless you're going to go down that road, you have to say, okay, what is it about our society, the institutions of our society, the socialization of boys, the definitions of masculinity and masculinities, as well as femininity and femininities, and how do the various organizations and institutions in our society help to shape those norms around what it means to be a man or a woman or outside the binary? In other words, you have to really be introspective and critical and self-critical about our whole society. And by the way, this is global, not just local and, you know, in the U.S. If you really want to devise effective solutions long-term to these problems.
Violent crimes are not exclusively the acts of boys and men, but there's no question that men and boys greatly outnumber women and girls as perpetrators. When you consider mass school shootings like those at Parkland, Columbine, and Sandy Hook, you'll note that these men were very young, scarcely more than boys. Again, I'm not excluding women and girls, but I am saying that when it comes to committing violent acts, purely based on the numbers alone, women and girls are the exception and not the rule. So what is it about young men that makes them more likely to commit violent acts?
Well, I mean, it's how we raise boys and how we define manhood and how boys learn and therefore how we teach. Because one of the things that I always say is people will often say about bad behavior or abusive behavior or violent behavior, they'll say, well, if it's not genetically predetermined, then it must be learned behavior. And I always say, I'd rather say it's taught behavior rather than say it's learned behavior. Because if you shift the language from learned to taught, in other words, make it from passive to active voice, you shift the onus of responsibility onto those of us who are teaching our sons or our daughters or anybody what it means to be a man or a woman. And it puts the responsibility back on those of us who have more influence and more power. So I would say we're teaching boys and men from an early age that, for example, heterosexual boys and men that are entitled to women's bodies. So much of sexual violence by men against women involves an element either overtly or subtextually of entitlement. I'm entitled to this. This is my narrative. This is my story. I'm going to enact it. She's essentially just a prop in my performance. I'm not even going to think about her as a real person. This is just about me and my needs. In domestic violence, we know from 40 plus years of the modern battered women's movement, as well as the movement to work with men who batter, that the belief system that underlies abusive behavior is the most important thing that has to shift. It's, of course, the behavior has to change, but there's a belief system that underlies the behavior. Heterosexual men who are abusive to their wives or their girlfriends don't just like have a bad temper or lose their cool. They actually believe that their needs should be met by her, and they will get her to meet his needs, whatever those needs might be. If they need to use force or the threat of force to get it, then they will do that. That's a belief system. And that's something that these boys and men are learning. Therefore, they're being taught that in some way. And by the way, not just being taught by individual teachers, like a parent or a teacher or a mentor. But, for example, I often say the media is the great pedagogical or teaching force of our time. People learn more from and are taught more from media than any single source of information. So if we're going to talk about changing social norms around gender or any major social issue, we have to critically examine how the media culture is playing a role in shaping those norms. And, you know, this means we have a lot of work to do, because if you look around, there's just an awful lot of men and young men acting out in abusive ways, both towards women and girls, towards other men and boys, and towards themselves.
Violence against women and girls is rooted in gender-based discrimination, social norms, and gender stereotypes. Given the devastating effect that violence has on women and girls, efforts have mainly focused on women's responses, as well as providing services for survivors. However, the best way to end violence against women and girls is to prevent it from happening in the first place by addressing its root and structural causes. This starts with men and how we raise boys. Here, Jackson shares more on these solutions to gender-based violence.
We all have to know that we're in a long-term struggle, so there's no quick fix. There's no, you know, inoculation. You know, you get inoculated against abuse, and then all of a sudden you're fine and free to go. I mean, I don't think it's like that. It's much more of a process. But one of the paradigm shifts, one of the ways of thinking that I think we need to take on in a much more systematic way, is that these are leadership issues, and especially in this case for men. And that means any man who's in a position of leadership in the business world, in politics, in communities, in religious organizations, in education, in media, sports culture. I mean, there's so many different sectors where there's leadership. But if you're a man in those positions of leadership, you need to know about sexual harassment, sexual assault, domestic violence. You don't need to be an expert, but you need to know about these subjects. And then you need to figure out how, within your sphere of influence, you can support victims and survivors. You can hold offenders accountable. And even more generally, you need to figure out how you can help to create a climate within which abusive behavior does not take place. And not because you're a nice guy helping out the women and you think it would be a nice thing for you to be involved in this initiative or take that stand here or there, but because you're a leader and we expect that of our leaders. If we want to get to a paradigm shift, which is to say a new way of thinking about this very old subject, which is gender inequality and men's violence against women, we have to think critically about how we're using language, because language structures thought. And so I've written both in my book, The Macho Paradox, and all kinds of other places and trainings, and in my TED Talk. I mean, I do all kinds of discussion about language. And I'll give you a handful of examples of the old language that keeps us in the old paradigm, right? So people will often use passive language. How many women were sexually harassed last year, rather than how many men sexually harassed women? Or they'll say how many women were raped on college campuses last year, rather than how many men raped women on college campuses? Or they'll say how many teenage girls in this state got pregnant last year, rather than how many men and boys impregnated teenage girls. Even the term violence against women is problematic because it's a passive phrase. There's no active agent in the sentence. It's a bad thing that happens to women, but nobody's doing it to them. They're just experiencing it, kind of like the weather. But if you insert the active agent, men, you have a new phrase, men's violence against women. Now, the point here is that if you continue to use passive language and don't mention men in any of these conversations, if you will, and you can see it over and over again in media, in the news, in op-ed pieces and reports, you can see it over and over again. The passive voice is used constantly in writing about gender equality issues and gender violence issues. What happens is you don't then have a subsequent discussion about the particularly gendered aspects, especially the extent to which the vast majority of this behavior is engaged in by men. And you don't really talk about that. People will say, well, it's obvious. Everybody knows it's men. But the point is you end up talking about what is happening to women. You end up talking about women's choices. You end up talking about what women are doing and thinking and wearing and the decision-making that they're engaged in around what should they do in various situations of harm or abuse. While that's not unimportant, it's important. It's not going to change anything, because if we're talking about individual women or even collectively women as a group getting safer, you're still not addressing the root cause of the problem, and therefore the problem is going to continue. And I often say, for example, if you teach women all these techniques of personal empowerment or, you know, self-defense or a laundry list or a checklist of things you should do every single day to make sure that you're safe in the way that you engage in the world on a daily basis, fine, okay, good, you do all those things and hopefully you're safe. But guess who's going to get it? It's the woman next to you or the woman next to her. Because if you don't address the root cause of the problem, the women are just playing musical chairs. The men are just going to find another target. I think it's so obvious that the ultimate solutions to these problems resides in shifting the paradigm and thinking about how the culture is producing abusive men and what are some of the normative practices that contribute to that.
If you think gender-based violence isn't an issue that you need to worry about, you couldn't be more wrong. This is a challenge that affects all of us, and solving it stands to benefit everyone. Here Jackson explains why.
Every single day, the news is yet another cataloging of male dysfunction, abuse, harm, and self-harm. Whether it's school shootings or mass killings or rapes or, you know, another scandal erupting, and whether it's Jeffrey Epstein or the Catholic Church or athletic programs or this workplace or that workplace. I mean, there's so much violence and abuse that is happening that doesn't need to happen, that is completely preventable, that is a direct result of the dysfunctional gender culture that we live in. And this is global. All of it's global. Pursuit of gender equality is one of the great unmet needs of the human species. And gender inequality is one of the great tragedies of our species. And it's related to every other issue. That's the other thing, that sophisticated people in the 21st century make connections between issues that sometimes the average person doesn't necessarily see. But when I started working on domestic and sexual violence issues when I was a young guy in college back a long time ago, I immediately saw, oh my God, this is not just like a separate issue. This is directly related to income inequality and racial justice and inequality and alcohol and drug problems and family dysfunction. And I mean, on and on. There's so many issues in our society and other societies that are either directly caused by gender inequality, or they're exacerbated by them, or they're intersecting with them. And I always say promotion of gender equality is one of the healthiest and best things that humans can do if we want to survive as a species. I mean, because it's related to everything, including climate change. I mean, every single issue you can think of import has aspects that are connected to gender inequality. And preventing men's violence against women, preventing whether it's sexual harassment, sexual assault, domestic violence, relationship abuse, is the front edge of promoting gender equality. Because one of the first ways that gender equality is blocked is by violence. And that's, by the way, on the micro level in an interpersonal relationship, or on the macro level of, you know, social organizations, or at the higher level of governments and states. Gender violence prevents the promotion of gender equality. So to the extent that we can reduce gender violence, we're going to open up space for gender equality. Think about all the time, for example, women spend just on a daily basis to prevent themselves from being sexually assaulted or sexually harassed or otherwise avoiding violence. And think about all the time that they spend after having been victimized or assaulted, that they deal with the trauma, the recovery, the sometimes the substance abuse that flows from that as a self-medication. Think about all of that and take it away. Because if violence never happened, you wouldn't have any time or any need for all that time and energy and money and focus on the issues of violence and abuse and trauma. And think about all that time and energy being spent on the promotion of positive equality promotion. I think you could see that we're talking about enormous, enormous difference over time.
It was such a privilege to learn about gender-based violence from Jackson. The far-reaching impact that this creates on every single one of us was surprising. The solutions are clear, and something that each of us can put into practice by shifting the way we speak, think, and take action to address the issue. If you are a victim of gender-based violence, please reach out for help. We've included resources in the show notes on our website, thefixpodcast.org, which includes the contact details of organizations in each state that can help you. Importantly, though, I want to encourage all men to read Jackson's book, The Macho Paradox, and watch his TED Talk, Violence Against Women, It's a Men's Issue. Both these resources provide insights and actionable strategies that all men can take to tackle this issue. Thank Thank you for tuning into our episode today. If you're interested in partnering with us or being a guest on the show, please reach out through our website, thefixpodcast.org. You can also sign up to our weekly newsletter and contribute your story there. Thanks again, and I'll catch you all again next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.